You will hear a number of different recordings, and you have to answer questions on what you hear. There'll be time for you to read instructions and questions. And you have a chance to check your work. All the recordings will be played only once. The test is in 4 sections. At the end of the test, you will be given 10 minutes to transfer your answers to an answer sheet. Now turn to Section 1.
Section 1.
You will hear a phone conversation of a man ordering items from a library. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 3. Now listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 3.
Good morning, City Central Library. May I help you?
Yes, I want to order some books and copies of articles, please. You can send them to me through the post or courier, can't you?
Yes, certainly. I'll just get the form and take down some details. First, your name, please, sir.
Lester Mackie. That's M-A-C-K-I-E.
Mackie, Lester. And your membership number?
That's M-9301274.
M-9301274. Thank you. Now your address, please. That's the address you want us to send the items to.
It's 17 Westmead Road, Annandale.
And could I have your phone number and your fax number, please?
Yes, the fax number is 863-5923.
863-5923.
That's correct. The daytime phone number is 02579 6363 and after 5 p.m. it's 579 1857.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 4 to 6. Now listen carefully and answer questions 4 to 6. Now, may I ask why you'll be needing the books? I'm sorry about this, but we have to have this information whenever we send books out from a telephone request.
No problem. I'm preparing a short article for the Environment Watch section of the local newspaper. We're quite concerned about the problems we're facing here now, especially since we've been getting so many tourists in the district.
Oh, I know. I'm so glad someone's doing something about publicising the problem.
Now, how long can I keep the books for?
Well, as you know, our normal loan period is 3 weeks with a 2-week extension over the phone. However, in cases where we send books out by post, we allow a longer initial loan period to allow for the delivery time. So you may have the books for 6 weeks from the date of postage. But I'm afraid the 2-week extension won't apply then. However, you would be able to renew them by bringing them in for stamping, provided no one else has a reserve on them.
I should think the normal period would be enough. Now, how do you prefer the postage and photocopy fees to be paid?
We accept both cash and credit card, but it will be such a small sum it might be more convenient to send us a money order.
Would it be all right if I left it until I come in next time and just pay cash then?
Of course, there's no problem with that at all.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now listen carefully and answer questions 7 to 10. Shall I tell you the articles I want copied first?
Good, I've got all that down. Now perhaps we could go on to the books. You tell me the books you need, and I'll tell you whether we have them immediately available, or whether you'll have to wait a bit for them. All right. The details I'll need are the author, publication date, and the title of the book. Is that okay?
Yes, no problem at all. The first one is by Holdsworth, published in 1978. It's called Land and Water Resources of Australia.
Yes, we have that available on the shelves.
Good. Now, the next two are both government publications. The first one is rather old, published in 1984. That's Land Degradation in Australia. But the second one is more recent. That's Coastal Zone Inquiry Report from 1993.
I'm afraid we don't have the first one. We'll have to get that from the government archives for you. But the second one, the later one, has just come in, so I'll put that aside for you.
Wonderful. Now, there are three more. Two rather old books, but they're standard works, so you probably have them. Environmental Law by Fisher and Environmental Chemistry by Raiswell. They were both published in 1980.
Yes, we do have both those texts. Environmental Law should be on the shelf, but Environmental Chemistry is out on loan at the moment. I'll put that on reserve for you.
Right. And the last one is The Environment Impact of Travel and Tourism by M. Burns and Associates, 1989.
Burns, Environment, No, I'm sorry, we don't have that. I'll have to use the Interlibrary Loan Service and get it in for you.
Oh, how long is that likely to take?
Well, it really depends where we can get it. If it's available locally, it shouldn't take more than a few days. But if we have to send overseas for it, it could be rather a while. We'll do our best to hurry it up. That is the end of section one. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section two. Section two. You will hear a lecture about the changes of the labour market. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 16. Now listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 16.
Hello. This afternoon I'm going to begin by outlining some of the main changes that have occurred in the labor market and in working practices over the last 20 years. One of the most significant changes has been the vast move, especially in industrialized countries, from manufacturing to service industries. Although this has freed many people from heavy and repetitive work in factories, many people find their work in service industries equally boring and just as badly paid. Another important change has been that people no longer expect to spend most of their working lives with the same company or organization. As a result, people set themselves objectives which they work towards, and they use the various jobs they do and the different companies they work for as steps towards these objectives. For individual workers, I think this has helped them become more independent and given them more control over their lives. In most companies, the management team has become less hierarchical. This is often called downsizing or delayering. In other words, there are fewer managers and fewer levels of management. As a result, there are not so many opportunities for promotion, and people often feel frustrated because they find themselves at the same level for many years without the chance to rise in the company. Competition from new products and from different parts of the world means that nowadays companies have to adapt very fast to changing markets, and this requires them to be very flexible. Increasingly, this means they don't employ workers directly, but employ other small specialist companies or individuals to do the job when they need them. This means they don't have the expense of employing workers when they don't need them. I believe that for workers who are subcontracted, there are various gains. They're often better paid for the work they do. They work in smaller, more human organizations, and they're able to organize their working lives in ways which suit them, instead of having to fit the routines of a large company. Of course, the biggest areas of change have come with the technological revolution. Workers now have the chance to go job hunting on the World Wide Web, so they have more opportunities to find better or more suitable jobs. Statistics show that generally people work much harder than in the past, with much longer hours. New technologies are largely responsible for this, especially mobile phones and beepers or pagers. These things force employees to stay in contact with their offices even in their free time and at weekends. I think this is a pity, as people need to be able to relax and have time for themselves. Another effect of technological change is that jobs evolve very rapidly, and workers have to be continually going to training courses in order to remain employable. As a university teacher, I can hardly complain about this. But it can place enormous strain on workers if they're obliged to retrain for jobs well into their late 50s when they're getting close to retirement. So I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Before you hear the rest of the lecture, you have some time to look at questions 17 to 20. Now listen carefully and answer questions 17 to 20.
New technology and global competition have, between them, meant that the life cycle of products isn't nearly as long as it used to be. This has been a profound effect on companies and on the way we work. In order to cope with sudden changes in the market, companies need much greater flexibility from their staff. As a result, large numbers of tenured or permanent jobs have disappeared. Apart from university lecturers like myself, few people can expect nowadays to have a job for life. And temporary, short-term employment has become the norm for many people. However, we have to be positive. One wonderful change which has come out of the technological revolution is the opportunity for the office worker to telecommute. That is, for them to work from home with their computer and modem. This enables them to organize their working lives around their families and cut out the long journeys to and from work, which are the bane of most office workers' lives.
That is the end of section 2. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 3. Section 3. You will hear three psychology students discussing some project work they have been doing for a seminar on intelligence. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 27. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 27. Hi Martin, hi Maria. How are you getting on with your project? You've got to give the seminar on Friday, haven't you?
Hi Farouk, we're getting on fine. It's just so interesting. Do you want to hear about it?
Well, I've got 10 minutes before my next lecture, so why not? Let's hear it.
Great, and it'll help us sort out who said what, won't it Martin?
That's right, you know. What we've been looking at is research done by a number of psychologists from different parts of the world on intelligence quotients. How they've been rising over the last 50 years. Really?
Yes. Some psychologists have measured increases in intelligence of up to 25 points in one generation.
Amazing. What's causing us all to get cleverer?
There's a political scientist from New Zealand called James Flynn. Well, he's a pioneer in this field, and he's found that people perform the visuospatial tasks in intelligent tests much better than they did 50 years ago. Partly, he puts this down to people playing with their PCs and watching TV, things like that.
What about diet? Does that have anything to do with it?
Perhaps. Robert Howard, a Sydney psychologist, thinks that it does. Just as eating better has made children taller, their average intelligence has also risen. He also says that parents are having fewer children, so they're able to pay more attention to their children, which has a positive effect on kids' intelligence.
IQ tests have verbal and numerical elements too. Have these also been improving?
Yes, but only moderately. It's the visuospatial element which has made the big difference, and Flynn also suggests that modern activities like driving may play a part in this.
There's a British researcher, John Rust, who has made the general point that modern life is much more complicated than it was 50 years ago. Our intelligence has had to develop in order to cope with it all.
Remember also that far more children have the opportunity to go to school nowadays. Howard thinks that must be a leading factor in improved IQ test performance.
Well, yes, that would seem fairly obvious.
To come back to John Rust, he suggests that as science and knowledge develop, ideas become more complex. Well, the people who produce these ideas, the Einsteins and Hawkings, are obviously highly intelligent people, but, he says, ordinary people's intelligence has also had to develop to cope with these new theories.
Before you hear the rest of the discussion, you have some time to look at questions 28 to 30. Now listen carefully and answer questions 28 to 30. Are there any limits to intelligence, or will the human race just continue to get cleverer and cleverer?
Actually, research in some Western industrialised countries such as Australia and some European countries suggests that intelligence rose quite steeply for 2 to 3 decades and then levelled off a few years ago. Some pessimists think that quite soon we may see it beginning to dip. In some countries, students seem to be less motivated than before. In that sense, there may well be a limit to intelligence.
On the other hand, this rise in intelligence started to happen some years later in East Asian countries, the so-called Asian Tigers, and it still hasn't levelled off.
Is higher intelligence what has caused exam results to improve here in Britain, do you think?
Well, that's a rather political question, so it depends on who you ask. But you must remember that 30 years ago, only about 5% of school leavers here went on to university. But there's been a vast expansion of the university system, and nowadays about 30% of young people get a higher education. So I guess exams must have been getting easier for all those people to get in. That is the end of Section 3. You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turn to Section 4. Section 4. You will hear a woman giving a lecture to a group of business students on subject of motivation at work. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 32. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 32.
My lecture today is on motivation at work. If managers are to improve the running of their organisation, it's important for them to understand what motivates the workforce, to know how to satisfy both the high flyers and those who have lower ambitions or ability. First of all, let's look at the model of how motivation works. You will see that every member of the workforce has needs or expectations, and these needs and expectations will affect each person's behaviour. For example, they will work harder if they know that they will be rewarded. That is, if they can achieve their goals of higher pay or promotion. The achievement of these goals will, in turn, lead to job satisfaction. This then feeds back into the workers' needs or expectations.
Before you hear the rest of the lecture, you have some time to look at questions 33 to 35. Now listen carefully and answer questions 33 to 35.
Over the years, the development of different theories of management and different approaches to organisation has affected the way we view motivation. In the 19th century, the writer Frederick Taylor put forward the theory that workers were only interested in making money. In contrast, in the early 20th century, researchers found that people went to work to satisfy a range of different needs and not simply for financial reward. One need in particular was emphasised, the social need. An early study done on a coal mining company, for instance, showed that people generally were happier and worked more productively if they were able to work in teams.
Before you hear the rest of the lecture, you have some time to look at questions 36 to 37. Now listen carefully and answer questions 36 to 37.
One important 20th century theory of motivation was that put forward by Maslow in 1943. Maslow identified five important needs which he placed in a triangle. At the bottom of the triangle, he put what he called basic needs, good pay and pleasant working conditions. Then above the basic needs, he put security needs, safe working conditions and job security. His third need he called social needs, the need to have friends, at work, and get on with the boss. Fourth were status needs, a job title and social recognition. Finally, at the top of the triangle, Maslow identified the need for advancement, to have a challenging job with opportunities for promotion. His theory isn't perfect, but it's a convenient framework for viewing the different needs and expectations of work that people have. And what's more, I believe it's still valid today.
Before you hear the rest of the lecture, you have some time to look at questions 38 to 40. Now listen carefully and answer questions 38 to 40.
During an early 21st century survey of full-time employees, when asked what gave them job satisfaction, 72% said having an inspirational leader. 55% of those questioned found satisfaction in the challenging nature of their work, 50% by being paid well, and 40% said flexible working hours. Consequently, we can see that this indicates that today, an employee's opinion of the quality of the leadership in their workplace is an important factor, influencing belief in the company as a good place to work. Motivation varies over a person's working life and also according to where they live. Studies show that people have different goals in different countries. For example, a good lifestyle would appear to be more important in Spain than it is in Sweden. Financial security is more important in the US than in the UK. Social contact at work is important to workers in both Germany and Australia, but not of top importance in Britain and Italy. As to high status, this is more important in the USA than to Europeans. These results indicate clear differences between countries, but I don't think they should be taken too seriously. There have been many theories which have attempted to explain the nature of motivation. These theories are partially true, and by and large, all help to explain the behaviour of certain people at certain times. However, none really provides all the answers. The best a company can do is to provide people with the right environment to be self-motivated. If they are self-motivated, they will perform well.
That is the end of section 4. You now have half a minute to check your answers. That is the end of listening test, the IELTS test. You now have 10 minutes to transfer your answers to the listening answer sheet. Thank you.